Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Welcome to another show. You know, just a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about, because I've always wanted to do a show about this, and there's not a lot of people that, it just seems like not a lot of people want to talk about this topic. Maybe they're not aware of it. Maybe they think it's just too far out. But I was Googling, and I found the name of Rodney Clough. He's from Sun City, Arizona. And I sent him an email, and he was kind enough to respond. And because of that, I have him on the phone, actually through Skype. How you doing?
Doing fine.
Thanks
Glad
for
to be
joining
on your show this morning.
Thanks for joining me. Now you're in Sun City, Arizona.
Sun City, yeah, it's just right outside Phoenix, towards the northwest.
And how long you been down there?
Well, we moved over here from Tempe. It's in about 2005. When we sold our home over in Tempe, we made enough to buy our condo out here free and clear. So it's a retirement community.
So you're retired, but you're still doing investigations, right?
Well, I'm not retired because I took my retirement money instead of taking my retirement. So I made a mistake there because I thought that with all the reports of the debt crisis that our country would have gone belly up before now, but if I'd take my retirement, yeah, I would be retired.
So we're going to talk about the hollow earth, and there's a theory that's been posted by many people. There's been books, apparently even some people claim to be eyewitnesses, and even people like Admiral Byrd and his voyage. So, and you've done research on this for, when did you first start with this, Rod?
Well, I first learned about it when I was working on a New Mexico farm in about 1966 when I was 16 years old. Some of the boys from the Mormon colonies of northern Mexico, where I lived at that time, got a job out there in New Mexico working on this farm. And one evening, one of the boys told me that they had a discussion with a farm manager's son, who told him that he had just read a book. It's probably Raymond Menard's book, The Hollow Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the Hollow Earth, and he said that the farm manager's son thought it was an ideal place for the Lord to hide the lost 10 tribes of Israel. And so that got my interest, and many years later, when I had come to the United States and living in Phoenix, I saw an advertisement for the book, and I sent for it, and that started my research into evidences for the Hollow Earth. I've come up with historical, scientific, and scriptural evidence for our Hollow Earth, and I ended up writing a e-book called World Top Secret, Our Earth is Hollow, outlining these evidences that I have found over the years.
Now, the first book you're speaking of, when did that come out, the one that you read initially?
Well, I believe it was in the 60s. I'd have to look it up in my bibliography to see exactly what year it was published.
Now, weren't there two books that were written back like around 1920 discussing the Hollow Earth?
Well, actually, the Hollow Earth is probably one of the oldest theories since the creation of the Earth. I have found evidence that the prophet Enoch, that lived several hundred years before the flood of Noah, was probably the first explorer that went to the Hollow Earth. He talks about the inner sun, about the aurora streaming towards the ends of the earth, about the rivers coming out of the Garden of Eden.
Hmm.
So over the years, there's been many, many, many people that have written and talked about the Hollow Earth. Perhaps the most scientific would probably be some of the 19th century scientists, such as Edmund Halley of England, who was the scientist that discovered the Halley's Comet.
Mm-hmm.
He came out with the theory that the Earth was hollow and that it had several hollow planets within it, and that they rotated at a different rate than the outer shell of the planet, giving rise to the magnetic field of the Earth. And he was able to explain with this model how the magnetic field of the Earth is does not coincide with the rotational axis of the Earth, which would be the case if the Earth was like a common dynamo,
mm-hmm.
in which the magnetic field coincides with the core and the rotational.
That's where you're losing me, Rod.
aspect of.
So you're telling me if you have a rotational, we'd have a different magnetic field, is what you're saying.
The scientists haven't been able to understand how the Earth's magnetic field is offset from the rotational axis of the Earth. But this can be explained if there is another body inside the Earth that is rotating at a different angle. Okay.
Boy, that just seems like...
That's the conclusion that we've come to with the Hollow Earth theory, is that the Earth, being hollow, has an inner sun. And it has having a positive charge, and the Earth's shell has having a negative charge, but the inner sun has a rotational axis at a different angle than the rotational axis of the planet.
When you say an inner sun, is this not like a sun that like we see out in space, the sun that we have in our solar system? Is this like just a ball of light, this inner sun?
I've come to the conclusion that even our outer sun is a crystal. It's a large ball of crystal.
Hmm.
There's a scientist in California that has analyzed satellite images of our outer sun, and has come to the conclusion that the sun has a solid surface. In fact, on my website, you can watch a video that I have that this scientist got one from one of these satellites, showing that there was a sun quake on the sun surface of the sun, and you can see where it's after the sun quake goes off that a tsunami goes out from the epicenter, and it goes out as it goes out, it goes over this mountain.
Really. Wow.
So if the conclusion from that is that if the sun has a solid surface, it doesn't have enough mass to be solid all the way through, and therefore my conclusion is that the sun is hollow. It's actually a crystal. I did an analysis of the sun, and if it has a shell 10% of the diameter of the sun, similar to what we believe the Earth has a shell that is 10%. You know, the thickness of the shell of the Earth is about 800 miles thick, which is about 10% of the diameter of the Earth, which is 8,000 miles. Well, if the sun is the same way, the density of that shell would be around 2.69, I forget exactly, but it's about the density of glass with some impurities. So
let me ask you this now: if we have a hollow Earth, And you believe there are people living there, or there are beings living there?
Well, yes. You know, we have quite a bit of historic evidence that our Earth is hollow, and people have gone there and visited with the people there and returned to tell about it. You know, people hear and learn in their college textbooks that down inside the Earth is molten, but there's not any scientist, and you can't show me any book of any scientist that has gone down in the Earth and come back to tell the people with an eyewitness that there is molten lava down there. And so but basically their theory that the Earth is molten inside is based on a myth, the myth of the Catholic Church, that down inside the Earth is a location of hell and burning fire. No such thing. We have actually historical records of people who have been down inside the Earth, and it's not molten lava. Of course, volcanic action does happen in limited locations.
So it doesn't get warmer the further, you know, you hear this and you see it on programs. The further down you go, the hotter it gets.
Well, in some places it does where there is volcanic action, but in most places there's not any volcanic action. It's just this nice temperature all the way through.
Now,
the historical book that documents this is called Eta Dorpa, is written by a guy called himself I Am the Man in about 1827, whom the Hollow Earth researcher Bruce Walton from Utah, after doing investigation, found out that his name was William Morgan. And William Morgan wanted to join the Freemasons, and for the purpose of divulging their secret rites, and which he did, and I have his book. But for that, they had him thrown in prison on a small debt that he had, and then they stole him out of prison. They threw a body into the river and claimed it was him, but it was just a cover, because they actually took him and sent him on a journey to the Hollow Earth. Somehow they had found this opening near the Mammoth Cave in Kentucky and had made contact with somebody from the Hollow Earth. It doesn't explain in the book how they made contact with this inner earth guide, but he was taken by this inner earth guide through this cavern clear to the inner surface of the planet. Many years later, he returned and had his book published.
Now, why would they do that? Why would they want him to go inside and experience this?
Well, he was that was part of their penalty for divulging their secret rites, and they took him out into the forest, and they put him in this cabin, locked him up, and they fed him until his beard grew real long, and then they came and put some kind of chemicals on his skin to make it wrinkly and look like an old man, and some chemical on his beard and his hair turned it white. Then they took him back to his wife, and his wife couldn't recognize him. He says, my husband's dead. She considered him a homeless and evicted him. Mm-hmm. And so he just gave in to their plan, and they took him down to Kentucky, and that was their goal, is to send him on this journey to the Hollow Earth with this guide. And he wrote a book about it. It's really interesting how he describes it. They went in not being able to see. It was really dark in the cavern, but about 10 miles down, there was this phosphorescent glow in the air that was able to see from there on down.
Now, you know, I was going to ask you this, Rod, because, again, if they don't want him to find out about this, it's almost like they want him to a little bit. You know, they could have easily killed him, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they could have easily killed him, but they didn't. They
It's almost like they want him to find out about this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And there was a whole setup for him to go do this study. He was an author already. So him going down there and then coming back with the manuscript of his trip down there confirmed that the Earth is indeed hollow.
And you're saying
the other story of Olaf Jansson is a Norwegian who went with his father. According to the hollow Earth theory, at the north, near the north and south poles, there are these large openings that go into the hollow Earth. My estimate is that it starts curving in about 450 miles from the center of the opening. It starts gradually curving in, and then at the neck of it, it's only about 90 miles wide. Olaf Jansson, he went with his father. His father was a fisherman. In about 1829, they went fishing up above Norway, above Franz Josef Land islands, and they noticed this lead out across the ice towards the northeast. And he remarked to his father, he says, that many times you've told me that our ancestors said that in the north lives these people that were called the chosen people. Apparently they had a legend that their ancestors or cousins of their ancestors had migrated north into the north country to this paradise up there. And so he says to his father, well, why don't we go exploring? And so his father agreed, and they went out through this lead in the ice, and they just accidentally went through this polar opening into the hollow Earth. They didn't even know that the Earth was hollow until after they got there. And about halfway through, they noticed the mirage of the sun. They thought it was a mirage, but it was actually the inner sun they could see coming up over the horizon as they advanced through the polar opening. And they got to the inner continent. It was just a very lush vegetation. They went up this river that they later found out was one of the four rivers that comes out of the Garden of Eden, called the Heidekel River. Hmm. And as they were going up this river, they were met by this big ship that was coming down of the inner earth people, and they were invited to go with them. They said that they were North European type peoples with blonde hair, red hair, light complexion, very well educated people. They were also very large in stature. He says that everything inside the hollow earth grows very, very large. Trees are up to 1,000 feet tall, 120 feet in diameter. Grapes grow as big as our oranges, and apples as big as our head.
How bad are the mosquitoes?
Yeah, he didn't mention any mosquitoes. But
that wouldn't be so good.
He did mention that they have birds. He saw birds there that with wingspans up to 20 feet wide.
How tall were the people? How tall were the people?
Well, he says that the women were about 8 feet tall, and the men up to 15 feet tall.
See, I've heard reports of these kind of things before, and this is what I find interesting, and I've read some of the books that you have, probably. We're going to take a break. Rodney Clough out of Sun City, Arizona, my guest this week on Out There.
Out there. Out there. Out there. Out
there. Sirens. Jet engines. Car horns. Leaf blowers. Today's world puts our sense of hearing on overload. Luckily, there are places we can go to refocus our senses. Our national wildlife refuges. It's amazing how much more you'll hear when you just take a minute to listen. Like a stirring chorus of songbirds warbling in the treetops. or the industrious beaver slapping its tail in the mountain pond over baritone bullfrogs, or the pulsating beat of a pileated woodpecker looking for a meal. When you hear these things, you're hearing the world the way we found it. With over 500 refuges across America, you don't have to go far to make a special connection with nature. Learn more at fws.gov/refuges. That's fws.gov/refuges.
Hi, this is Jill Cornwell, and I'm a telepathic animal communicator, and you're listening to Out There with TJ Ryan.
Rodney Clough of Sun City, Arizona. He's an author, and you know what? I really don't... What else do you do? What kind of background do you have, Rodney?
Well, I worked for the Arizona Department of Health Services for about 16 years as an information technology specialist doing computer programming and database management. And I still do work for them on a contract basis.
You said you came over to the country... So where are you from?
I was born in Colonia Juarez, Chihuahua, Mexico. Okay. My ancestors moved down there when my grandfather was about 12 years old, when United States Congress changed the law in the United States that you couldn't have more than one wife. And at that time, the Mormons were having more than one wife. They called it plural marriage. So, you know, after that, then they quit having more than one wife, but they still had to take care of their families. And so the church, they bought some land in Canada and in Mexico and invited those families that had more than one wife to go to immigrate. And
so you grew up in a plural marriage type of situation. Your parents?
Well, my grandfather.
Your grandfather.
Yeah.
Had how many wives?
Well, my great-grandfather had two wives, on my father's side. And on my mother's side, he had four wives.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, and that's the reason why they went down to Mexico. It's because they were being put in jail out here, and they couldn't take care of their families.
How many wives do you have now, Rodney?
Well, like I said, after that, they quit.
No, but how many wives do you have now? One's enough, right?
Yeah, one's enough.
I don't understand
how those guys were able to do that, but
well, you know, I never understood, and this is just getting off the subject a little bit. If that's what people want to do, and they're happy doing it, as long as people aren't being forced into it, I could care less. And I don't see why it's against the law.
Abraham in the Bible had more than one wife, and all his sons. Jacob,
well,
Isaac and Jacob all had more than one.
And if a woman wanted to have several husbands, which I don't know why any woman in her right mind would probably want that, then so be it. I could care less. They can do what they want. If they're happy, if people are happy and productive, then I never did understand why they changed that. But maybe, obviously, the religious reasons behind it. So you started investigating this in 1966 after you heard of it. Just like me, I started hearing about this. Now, I was going to ask you this time around a couple of questions. One, if the Earth is hollow, and you're saying there's a central sun, and the sun is not what we think of it, and there are beings that live there, and maybe some of those beings we referred to in the Bible, like the Goliath, you know, and the giants, we've heard them. We've heard in other history, people have hinted around about these mythological beings that were much bigger. But also, how, if there's openings at the north and south, how come we just can't go there at will, whenever we want?
Well, in about 2003, I was contacted by Steve Curry of the expedition company of Provo, Utah, with the idea of organizing an expedition to go to this through the polar opening to the hollow Earth, and we weren't able to do it because he got brain cancer and died a few years later when we were just about ready to go.
I remember reading about that.
But through that, I was put in contact with a retired Colonel Billy Woodard, who says that he, after going into the military, was assigned to Area 51 out in the Nevada desert, and is taken underground into their facility there. He was assigned to the Hollow Earth file that they have there. And from this Hollow Earth file, he was able to get the coordinates of the North Polar Opening from Admiral Byrd's flight there in about 1947, who flew from what they think is Alert Base, Northern Canada, through the North Polar Opening into the Hollow Earth. Admiral Byrd says that after passing the ice, he came to open ocean and then to continent covered with lush vegetation. Even saw a mammoth wandering on the terrain below. He was presently sighted by a flying saucer type craft that took control of his airplane and landed him near an inner Earth city. He was taken in and interviewed by the government official of that nation and given a warning that they wanted him to bring back to Washington, and that was that they didn't approve of us using nuclear weapons. And these people of the Hollow Earth, they believe that they are the guardians of the planet for the Creator. And so ever since, they've sent their flying saucers out to prevent nuclear war. That's where the flying saucers are most sighted, is around the nuclear facilities having nuclear weapons. And
so they have
intercepted the missiles.
So they have advanced technology to where it's superior to ours, is what you're saying, right?
Yes, my conclusion from my research is that there are many people that have migrated to the Hollow Earth over the years, probably beginning with the Lost Tribes of Israel, who migrated north out of Palestine about 687 B.C., and when they escaped the Assyrian captivity. They went up over the Caucasus Mountains, settled in northern, north of the Black Sea, went up into Europe and Russia, and some of them stayed behind and they became what we know as the Vikings, who I've traced my ancestry back to the Vikings also.
And you know the thing about this, and you know they're good navigators. We have a group that meets here. Now, I'm calling out of Upper Michigan. I don't know if you're familiar with the UP and all, Rodney?
No.
Okay. Well, we're just north of Wisconsin. We're connected to Lower Michigan through the Mackinac Bridge. We have a group every year, ancient archaeologists, who come to this area, and I'm sure they go all over the world. But they've uncovered things like mining in Upper Michigan and around this area 7,000 years ago from Europeans. So we know something about our history is not accurate.
It's interesting how these Vikings, they went all over the world, especially in the Northern Hemisphere, and they even came to America way before Columbus and settled and made a settlement up in Labrador. But one interesting history was Eric the Red, that I think was that migrated from Iceland to Greenland, and they established two colonies on the western shore of Greenland, and they lived there for almost 1,000 years, and there's records of them paying tithing to the Catholic Church. But then when there was the bubonic plague happened in Europe, they didn't send any ships for many years to visit these Greenland colonies of the Vikings. And when they finally did return in about 1721, they had all disappeared. And it wasn't until Lieutenant Green, who went to the pole with Admiral Perry in 1909, that he asked those Greenland Eskimos where these Vikings, lost Vikings, went to, or what happened to them. And they told him that one winter, a Viking hunting party had returned from the north and told all the people that they had discovered this paradise up in the north, and that it was much of a nicer place to live than Greenland. And so the Eskimo says that they just all picked up their bags and singing songs, traipsed off across the ice towards the north, and never returned.
Mm.
So the conclusion is that they actually found they were able to go over the frozen ice in the middle of the winter to the intercontinent through the polar opening and discovered this the paradise inside our Earth, and that's where they migrated to.
Let me ask you this, Rodney. Are there other openings where mysterious things happen on the planet? Like, for example, people have speculated that Bermuda Triangle might be one of those.
Well, there have been sightings all around the world where these flying saucers come out through lakes or out of the ocean.
Are you familiar with Bruce Gernon?
No.
His story is a pretty amazing one. In 1976, somewhere in there, coming back from Bermuda, and they were doing a real estate trip, him and his father and another man, they went through what he called a magnetic cloud, and it followed the ship, and it actually opened up inside there, and he was able to just get out of it before it collapsed. And when he did that, his vehicle went 80 miles, I think it was 80 or 90 miles. They were 90 miles outside of Miami. The next thing he knows is Miami Tower is radioing him saying, okay, do you want to land? And he says, I'm still a ways out. They said, no, you're right here. So we speculated, and he did some math on it, that his vehicle would have been traveling at like 30-some thousand miles an hour. And Bruce has been on all over TV talking about this. And I always thought what he may have ran into was one of the openings of this doorway. What's your take on that, Rodney?
Well, there may be an opening into the hollow earth below the Bermuda Triangle. We don't know for sure. I haven't seen the definite evidence of it, but I've heard of reports of flying saucers coming out of Lake Erie,
mm-hmm.
and going into other lakes around the world and coming out of the ocean. There's a guy named Cooper that rode the Pale Horse. He was in the Navy and on a submarine, and he was up on deck taking some measurements and photographing stuff when this flying saucer just comes right out of the ocean and flies up in the clouds, and then pretty soon it comes back and goes back into the ocean again.
See, I know a lot of people up here, Rodney, that have actually seen these ships going to the Great Lakes around here, Lake Michigan, Lake Superior. We're on those two lakes. The town I'm in is in near Escanaba, and I know more than one person who's described that in Lake Michigan. And then there's several towns on Lake Superior. Lake Superior is about 60 miles away. And people up there I've talked to have also seen the same thing. These ships going right into the water. So it's possible.
My chapter on the lost tribes of Israel found in my Hollow Earth book, I relate the account of this guy named Reinhold Schmidt of Los Angeles in about 1958. He had just read Frank Scully's book all about the flying saucers, and he says just one day he got this telepathic message to go out of the city and drive down into this rock quarry outside the city. And he waited there all day until the afternoon. A flying saucer swooped down out of the sky, and a guy got out, and he pointed this pencil-like device at him that shot out a beam that momentarily paralyzed him. But he says that what it did was to synchronize his magnetic field of his body to the craft so it wouldn't hurt him when he was invited aboard. Well, he was invited aboard, and they even drove his car up into the flying saucer, and they took off, and they went up into the Arctic. And he says that they went through this hole in the Arctic Ocean, and he was inside the hollow earth. They saw that he saw the inner sun. He saw on the inner surface many cities and beautiful vegetation. He was taken there on a tour of the inner earth for about 5 days, and then they brought him back out and brought him back to Los Angeles. So these people of the hollow earth are definitely more advanced than us. I surmise that if the lost tribes went up there 2,500 years ago with no sickness and disease in the hollow earth, and these people live up to 800 years old, they have just advanced in more technology than we have, faster than we have.
Do you think, Rodney, that you talk about the lost tribes, but do you think there was a race before we got made contact? Were there other ones already there?
Well, there's people that surmise that, but I haven't seen any evidence for it. In the Apocrypha of the Bible, it says that when the lost tribes went there, they went to a country that was never populated before.
Okay.
But I do believe that Adam and Eve were from the hollow earth. That because Olaf Jansen, when after spending a year there learning their language, was taken overground in a monorail train to their capital city, which he said was on the highest mountain plateau of the intercontinent, and he says it was built around the original Garden of Eden, that there's a big artesian fountain that comes up out of the garden, waters the garden, and then goes out and divides into four rivers that go to the four corners of the intercontinent. And so the conclusion is that from this is that the original lost Garden of Eden is inside our hollow earth. Now, this kind of coincides with the book of Etadorpa that William Morgan went to the hollow earth, because that cavern that he went to the hollow earth is probably the cavern that, which I surmise, you know, is the cavern that Adam and Eve got lost in. Because in lost books of the Bible, Book of Adam and Eve, after they were driven out of the garden for partaking of the forbidden fruit, the Lord told them to go into the Cave of Treasures, and they got lost. And they wandered around for many, who knows long, how long, and when they finally came out, Adam remarks that the sun that came up in the morning burned him, not like the soft rays of the sun while they were in the garden. So my conclusion is that they probably came out through this same cavern that William Morgan was taken in by this in-earth guide to the hollow earth, and their first home was in Missouri. Now, the first prophet of our Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Joseph Smith, said that that's where the Garden of Eden is, was in Jackson County, Missouri. But from my understanding of the hollow earth is that it wasn't on the surface of the planet. It was 800 miles down inside.
Well,
the inner earth people call this place the navel of the earth.
Now, there's been many people that have claimed to, at least there's been some that have claimed to have been inside there. I remember reading some of that before. And I remember there was even a story about a man who went there and was telepathically communicating with his wife. At least the story that I read. I mean, you hear a lot of different things about it. And there's different entrances across the world if this truly exists. Now, do you think this exists on other planets as well?
Yeah, it's, all the planets have auroras, and except Mars, that doesn't have a magnetic field. I figure that Mars doesn't have an aurora because it... probably the inner sun's rotating the same rate as the shell of the planet. But what gives rise to the auroras, well, scientists say they don't know. Originally, they said they didn't know what causes the auroras, but it's caused by solar wind that they don't know where it comes from. Then they start saying, well, it comes from our outer sun, but then that contradicts some of the observations of the radiation that causes the aurora is more powerful than the solar wind that's coming from the sun. And so then they surmise, well, that somehow it gets in the magnetic field of the Earth, but that's not so. The magnetic field of the Earth repels the solar wind of the outer sun around it. And in fact, it's the outer sun could not cause the auroras of the outer planets either. It's even less powerful for them. So the conclusion is that these auroras are actually caused by the solar wind from the inner sun of each planet as it comes out through the polar openings. It hits the atmosphere above the polar openings, conforming to the electromagnetic field of that planet, causing the lights to light up. We have photos of all, like Jupiter has beautiful auroras at both poles. Saturn also, Uranus has auroras. So this is one evidence that the Earth is hollow, that the auroras at both poles occur simultaneously at the very same time, giving one scientist from Fairbanks the idea that it was caused by something at the equator.
But I was going to ask you about these. When I'm looking at
the equator, it's from the inner sun at the center of the planet.
So when I'm looking up at night and up here, as far north as we are, and I see the northern lights, you're telling me it's the central sun inside the Earth. And conditions must have to be just right for that to happen, because I don't see them every night.
Well, the solar wind from the inner sun comes out through the polar openings, and it follows electromagnetic field lines of the Earth, so it conforms to that configuration at the poles, giving it the appearance of an oval at the poles. It's not just one, like a beam of a flashlight. It's a ring of light around the polar area that conforms to the magnetic field of the Earth. And it is the solar wind from the inner sun. When we went to Alaska in 1981 to research the hollow Earth, we went up on the hill north of Fairbanks and watched the auroras, and I could see the light start at the bottom and going up out into space, so the solar wind that causes the aurora goes up from the Earth, doesn't come down from space.
Yeah, it seems like even when I see them here, and we're pretty far north compared to most Americans, I guess other than Alaskans, it seems like they're shooting up, at least the view I have of it. So we're just we're out of time here, Rodney. I appreciate you coming on the show. Maybe we can have you back again, because I'm sure there's a lot to talk about, if you don't mind coming back again sometime.
Oh, sure.
Now, the name of your book is World Top Secret, Our Earth is Hollow.
Uh-huh.
And your website is ourhollowearth.com.
Right.
So people want to find out more. Now, you know, are going to people be listening right now and going, what? That's crazy. People ever do that to you, Rodney?
Well, yeah, you know, it's amazing how the truth is stranger than fiction. I've studied this theory for over 30 years, and the more I study it, the more evidence I find scientifically, scripturally, and historically. People that have gone to the hollow Earth, earthquakes prove the Earth is hollow, auroras prove the Earth is hollow. There's so much information that supports the theory. We actually wanted to go up there and prove it with an expedition, but unfortunately our expedition fell through. Our current expedition leader hasn't been able to raise the money for carrying it out. So,
well, furthermore,
I'm suggesting on my ebook I provide a sample expedition plan that anybody could go up there. We found a person up in Alaska that has a seaplane that they could use to fly to the hollow Earth from Point Barrow to the Intercontinental. I estimate about 8 hours.
But the thing is, Rodney, would they even let you in? Don't they keep you out? Do they just allow anybody to walk right in there?
Well, all of the accounts that I have of people going there peacefully, they have welcomed them with open arms and even let them return to tell about what they did. So I don't. The inner earth people don't have any. They don't have anything about people against people going to visit them as long as they, go peacefully.
So what keeps our military? What keeps our military from getting in there?
Well, our military. There's evidence. There's a book written by John Lith that wasn't ever published, but his manuscript is available, and he says that the military did try to invade the Hollow Earth through both the South Pole opening and the Russians through the North, and they were both repulsed with their flying saucer technology. Mm-hmm. So they have technology much more advanced than us. They're able to defend their land.
Because I always wondered if there is a Hollow Earth, as I know governments of this land, of the world, they're going to want a piece of that. And I wondered how they kept them away. Well, I appreciate your time. Rodney Clough, he's out of Sun City, Arizona. Again, his website, ourhollowearth.com. Go there if you want to find out more. He's done a lot of research. There's a lot of links. And I will talk to you again. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for having me on your show.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.